Can't you just see him? Rick Ocasek in that tall drink of water with his spiky hair in the 80s.
Yeah, I was going to say when the 80s. Yep. I do remember it very, very well.
Music you hear on KEXE, KBXE maybe takes you back in time, maybe makes you understand what new music is out there. You never know what you're going to get, whether it's conversations with authors or conversations with your neighbor. We're looking for pledges of support this morning.
800-662-5799. You can also pledge online at KEXE.org. 1, 2, 3, 4... 5, 6. We've had 6 people call in with their pledges.
We've met those matches, and many of those people wanting to get the new T-shirt that's available when you pledge at $20 a month or above.
Seven.
Wow. The new T-shirt is, the color is lake.
Well, that means nothing.
Yes, it does. Well, what's the color of a lake?
It's, yeah.
Blue-gray.
Blue-gray. It's got an orange sunset in the back. Trees and Sasquatch sashing across the front. Say in the bottom it says, which is brilliant, social distancing since 1976, Northern Community Radio.
We're here for you, keeping you safe, keeping you learning and connected to Northern Minnesota. So normally, John, we begin an interview with a bio of our guest, but with our next guest, Scott Newstock, he's author of How to Think Like Shakespeare, Lessons from a Renaissance Education, we are going to start with some audio from earlier this week.
Hi, my name is Axel Newstock. We live in Memphis but spend our summers at Horseshoe Lake. On Friday night, July 10th, we were reading when we heard a panicked loon cry. I looked up and saw an eagle dive down at a family of 3 loons that we have been watching. We saw the adults try and fend off the eagle. We even saw the eagle touch the water. It was very scary. At first, we thought that the baby loon was carried away. But as soon as we figured out that the baby loon had gone underwater and survived, we were so glad. We were crying when we thought that the baby loon had been killed. It was a close call.
Thanks so much. That is Scott Newstock's son, Axel. Scott is a professor of English and founding director of the Pierce Shakespeare Endowment at Rhodes College. They live in Memphis, Tennessee, but they spend their summers in northern Minnesota. And Scott, thanks so much for being a member and for donating a couple of your books and for making your kid call into us. How great was that?
We love KAXE. This is a wonderful, wonderful part of our lives up here. So it's just lovely to talk to you.
Yeah. So how does it kind of signify when you tune in, when you're up here at your cabin, that you're, it's a little more relaxed pace or a different kind of life up here?
You know, it's important for us to have our kids come up here. You know, my great-grandfather, who was named Axel, that Axel's named after, he purchased the property in the 1950s. And so my family's been coming up here for 4 or 5 generations now. So it's just lovely to be up here. We do a lot of reading and spend a lot of time outside. So it's just fantastic. And it's a way to escape the Memphis heat.
Well, let's talk about your new book that's out. It's called How to Think Like Shakespeare, Lessons from a Renaissance Education. What can people expect from this book? Can you really make John Bauer think like Shakespeare?
You know, in some ways, some people have pointed out that the title is a little misleading because the book is not really just about Shakespeare. It's thinking through education and using Shakespeare as a kind of hook, or thinking about what kind of education led someone like that to do the great work that he did. But it's not focusing on Shakespeare as the solution to everything, but just instead trying to get us to think a little differently about education and kind of walk back through what are some longstanding and valuable educational practices that worked for him and worked for many other thinkers and artists for thousands of years and can still work for us today.
What worked for you?
What worked for me? I mean, one of the things I talk about in the book is a chapter on conversation and, you know, being around other interesting people and talking to them and letting them press you in different directions. So in some ways, you know, what you model on KAXE is an example of that kind of ongoing conversation with a large community of people who are curious and excited and interested about the world and eager to learn more. So I think we can all think of good teachers that we've had who are very different from each other, but had that in common where they were modeling a form of excitement about the world. And I think we all want to cultivate that in our own education and throughout our lives.
You have one of our dignitaries around here, John Latimer, makes an appearance in this book. Why John Latimer? How does that apply to How to Think Like Shakespeare?
Well, one thing that I'm trying to suggest in the book is that it seems to me like right now, especially these last couple of decades, the way we talk about education seems to fixate unhelpfully on the language of skills, which seems to me a very narrow version of what education entails. I mean, certainly we all need to be trained in certain kinds of skills to achieve certain kinds of things, but is that really what we mean when we talk about the kind of heart of education? So what I try to do is say, okay, the skills thing seems to be a pretty weak or narrow way of talking about education. What's a better way? And the way that I suggest is the language of craft, thinking as a kind of a craft. And I think if you're willing to kind of go with that idea of thinking as a craft, that helps open up or helps you recognize the valuable aspects of thinking and education that we all care about. So I think John Latimer is a fantastic example of thinking as craft, thinking as a form of making, thinking that emerged through his practice of watching the world and observing and being in conversation with other people for decades. And it's not necessarily that he has a degree certification for the work that he does, but he has it through that embodied work of being an observer of the world and caring about the world and loving the world and being curious about the world. So that to me seems Shakespearean in the best sense. It seems like it's a craft of knowledge rather than a skills-based knowledge. Like, I wouldn't characterize the knowledge you show as full of skills. I think it's full of wonderful craft.
Yeah, and it's really pretty amazing to think, you know, the amount of time, over 35 years, that he's been doing this phonology show.
Yep.
And so many young people that he influenced, and maybe it's, you know, people like Axel who, you know, their parents had the radio on and they happened to hear it, but they kind of fell in love with nature through that. We often, you know, a couple times a year, I think, we talk to graduate students or doctors who got their start mm-hmm. and spark of nature because of listening to the radio. And John Latimer's passion comes through in almost everything he says.
Well, it came through in Axel's passion. Holy
yes.
cow. That was
absolutely.
That was
absolutely.
Very good.
But it is, you're right, it's that modeling. I mean, that I another chapter in the book is on imitation, and I think we often, sometimes naively, think that imitation is a kind of debased form of learning, like you're just imitating something, you're just copying something. But in fact, imitation is a really fundamental aspect of maturing and looking at someone as a model, someone like John Latimer, and then finding ways that you can emulate them and eventually becoming your own person. But along the way, you've imitated and kind of internalized people and models that you admire. And that's true for musicians, as we know. It's true for sports players. It's true for writers and people in all kinds of walks of life. Learn how to be who they are in part through imitating people they admire. So I think John Latimer is a great example of that as well.
So Scott, who did you admire as a young boy?
Oh, I have a long list of acknowledgments. I'm really lucky to come from a family of a lot of great teachers. So my mom's dad was the first Minnesota Teacher of the Year back in the 1960s. My dad's dad was a superintendent of schools in Aiken, Minnesota. My dad was a award-winning professor at the University of Minnesota, Duluth. So I'm really fortunate to be blessed to come from a family of great, great teachers up and down the lines, in-laws, cousins, aunts and uncles. So I try to list as many as I can, but I'm sure I missed them along the way. So I've just been really lucky to have a lot of great influences in my life.
And who introduced you to Shakespeare?
I had a fantastic eighth grade teacher in Duluth, where I grew up, named Tim Blackburn, who introduced us to Shakespeare and had us perform scenes. And then eventually I ended up doing lighting design for him as a stage lighter. And the first play that I did was Midsummer Night's Dream. I heard you, Heidi, mentioning
yeah.
that's the play that you saw at the Guthrie.
Yeah.
And he also took us on trips down to the Guthrie to see performances there. So that was a fantastic introduction to both be involved in making the plays as well as watching other people make the plays. That's another thing I talk about a lot in the book, is that thinking really is a form of making, and the more you can be involved in the making of something, the more you have a better sense of how it works.
Well, Scott, we thank you so much for supporting KAXE, KBXE, and actually going the extra mile by donating a couple of your books in hopes that other people support KAXE, KBXE
Absolutely.
As well. So thank you so much for doing that.
Wonderful. I'm so glad to do that. We love the show. We love the station.
Thanks a lot. That's Scott Newstock. You can get a copy of How to Think Like Shakespeare, Lessons from a Renaissance Education. Two of those available to the next two phone calls to 800-662-5799.